Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's Home Run time. It's your drive time show. And I don't know how to describe the weather. I know clear sky. I know cold because it's winter.
You must from your heart, Helmut. You must feel it in your heart.
I'm not trying to nail it. I'm just trying to describe it.
Yeah, no, it's been that kind of a Wednesday.
Are you kidding me? I'm not speaking from my heart to the weather.
Yeah, it's been that kind of Wednesday, yes.
Yeah, I know. So here we are again, as always, this time of the day with yet another topic. Only this one is more continental based and more, governance based. And for those of you that... managed to put your eyes, I don't want to say, put your hands, but put your eyes on our poster, then you saw that there's a lot of Afrobarometer reference going on there. Because yesterday, the Afrobarometer held its second, they launched it last year, but they started operating, I think, somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
But, this specific initiative of, of having just a dedicated branch that's dedicated to observing, governance on the continent. And that's, looking at it from the, basically from the aspect of communication between the leaders and the people. Because, we know that in any relationship, family, intimate, or any type of relationship, when, miscommunication almost always spells disaster.
Mm.
So, we have seen a lot of, a lot of, these disasters in, in a few countries that were also referenced into, referenced into that, the discussion that was ahead yesterday. That's in, Accra, Ghana. And they made a reference of, I think it was Mozambique, but the one that I remember clearly was Kenya.
Yeah.
With regards to the, to the tax, is it the tax riots that,
of last year.
Yeah, of last year. Yeah. So, this, obviously one thing that became apparent was that, there's a little bit of miscommunication here. And with regard, about Mozambique, that miscommunication is not miscommunication, it's just the lack thereof. Now, this is one of the things that they're trying to look at.
Are we talking about the Mozambique $2 billion?
Tuna bone scandal, yeah. That's not the miscommunication. That's a lack of communication on purpose.
Well, yes, the on purpose is, you are right.
Mm-hmm.
But remember how it began is because a new government came in and somehow, they highlighted that someone was trying to hide this debt. But the parliament wanted to know why.
Oh yeah, it was the previous administration that borrowed the money and then chopped all of it. No wonder guys that sit longer in power hate, new guys coming into office because the new guys always spells disaster.
The new guys come in and they ask, okay, so open up the books. Let's do an audit of things. Let's see where things went wrong. Let's see what happened.
Yeah, let's see where you ended. Yeah. I don't know where to start.
Exactly. And the weirdest thing is with Mozambique was that I think it was the IMF, the World Bank, that kept calling and say, hey, listen, when are you doing your payment on this loan? And then these guys went to their parliament
what payment?
What loan are these guys talking about? Just to find out it's the reason why the president's nephew, the president's son had a new car and probably a whole bunch of property somewhere.
You know, that holiday that a homeboy went last year,
It's that kind of a holiday.
Yeah.
And then you find out, we're supposed to buy fishing boats. What? Which are where? They're not there. And your former finance minister is living in Joburg.
Oh yeah, he's just chilling there going like, what are you talking about?
Living it up. His kids are going to private schools.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're here for a different discussion. Which takes us in that route.
It takes us in that route because, this time of the year, remember, they launched their maiden flagship report initiative.
Mm.
Yeah, the flagship report initiative, which focuses on democracy and governance, just across the continent. And, the now with the primary goal to basically determine the like which direction are we headed.
Yeah.
And this is actually this was a very good initiative considering how things are going in the Sahel region. Because from the look of things, the miscommunication or lack thereof of communication between the leadership and the citizens sometimes spill into something very ugly. Like we have, like we saw, I think it's safe to say, best case scenario, Kenya, and the worst case scenario, Mozambique. Like it quickly spills into that.
Yeah.
It's important to sort of like discuss things before they pile up into, before they pile up into chaos, because it that's where it starts. It starts from miscommunication, where you feel like the more people are talking and they feel like no one is listening to them, the more you start to generate a lot of negative sentiments.
Mm.
And from that negative sentiment, when the number increases, it becomes how do you think revolutions start? A bunch of citizens don't just wake up one morning and decide to go on a riot. No. There's something that have been neglected. There's a miscommunication or lack of communication that's going on there. Now, this is what they sort of like try to address. And they focused on key things now. Now, if you just a very clear example of what was focused on in this discussion is, more on a simple picture, just more like in a graph form, indicated on page 13 of the report that came out of that discussion.
Mm.
Yeah, they looked at voting. Yeah. What are the statistics on voting? And we have talked a lot about voters' apathy. And every country's on the continent? All the countries that they visited, I think they were about 30-something.
Yeah.
39,
yeah.
39.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these countries that they visited, they were looking at things like, how many people are turning up for elections? What numbers, what are the numbers saying? And how many people feel close to political parties?
Mm.
And more emphasis was put on youth and women. And, what are the frequencies in terms of discussing politics? How frequently do people talk about the political situation of their country?
Yeah.
And, how many attend community meetings? How many joined with others to raise up issues either in a form of a letter directed to a specific public official or like we saw with, with education, graduates appealing to the Ministry of Education with regards to their, with regards to unemployment.
Mm.
And they also, how many contacted the traditional leaders? How many contacted local government councillors? How many contacted political party officials? And how many contacted the MPs, aka Member of Parliament? And how many participated in protest or demonstration?
Mm.
And that's the part where I now just take a pause back and just clarify something. There's a big difference between protest, demonstration, and a riot.
Please, guys.
Yeah.
But even protest, I suspect, is slightly more emotionally charged than demonstration.
Yeah.
Because you can have a quiet demonstration. And you can have a very raucous, highly emotional protest. I saw that with the gender-based violence demonstrations of 2020. Because in many cases and in many scenarios, the subject matter that you and I always cite, the two ladies that asked the questions at the two engagements last year, the one where the Minister of Finance was and the other one that at the environmental discussion, these were subject matters that you could clearly see were based upon a scenario of why has no one asked this of the police? Because when it comes to safety and security of victims, specifically of victims from violent crimes or victims from gender-based violence, the police are the lead agency on such a scenario.
So that was their question that was directed to the Minister of Finance.
And remember, it was based upon those safe houses that were under Ministry of Gender.
Yeah.
And Ministry of Gender and police have some sort of a situation there, but you can clearly see it's one that's probably supposed to be in a more judicial role. What do I mean by that? Well, we all have watched TV. For example, like the Law and Order TV series, which is a quasi-legal crime-fighting TV show from the US that has been running for like 20 years.
That thing is long, you.
Yeah, that thing is pretty long. Actually, it began in the 80s. But the aspect of that particular TV show, I know it's an American example. I know, guys, I know. But when you take a look at some functional elements, you know, that you can see ultimately that helps to provide safety and security to the public regarding, you know, criminals, violent crimes and the likes. Because the one TV series I know is about violent sexual crimes, and the other one is about just, you know, overall violent crime. You know, if it's a murder case, high-ranking murder case, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the TV show focuses on. When you get to discussions of when, for example, let's say it's now a woman or a vulnerable individual that were the victim of a violent crime, there is literally a, like, it's not even an MOU because it's to an advanced level. Two agencies or two ministries have a cooperative element, an agency.
So they have intertwined roles.
Yeah. There is one that has a social services element, and then there's one that has, there's a dimension to it that has a policing element, and then there's a dimension that obviously can fast track things to work with the judiciary. Here's the scenario. When you see such particular things, because obviously this is also what this report tries to factor in, because it speaks predominantly about, you know, on a surface level, you got to look at political involvement, policy-making involvement of the everyday person.
Yeah.
Now, remember when you read all those parameters that the report focused on?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you got to the ones of voted in the last election or try to voice an issue with a group of others, or contacted an MP, or contacted a traditional leader, or
frequently discussed politics,
or frequently discussed it. Here's the particular scenario. In the aspect of voting in the last election, as opposed to what this report has here, please guys, it's not based upon the ECN report that was only
about Namibia.
Yeah, about Namibia, but it would have been released only yesterday. The ECN's report about the recent elections.
Mm-hmm.
So when people try to sort of like verify that statistic that's in this report of Afrobarometer to the ECN's report that'll only probably have been available from today digitally, then technically you would see that there would be a mismatch. So just to give people a caveat, a little bit of a heads up, this report that Helmut and I have here from Afrobarometer comes from Africa overall, and it came out last week, the 4th of July. So it didn't come out yesterday.
Yeah, the presentation.
Yeah.
Basically to make the report public was done yesterday.
Yeah. So just so you guys know, this particular report indicates here that 69% of Namibians participated that were interviewed or that were assessed or that were weighted or measured in terms of voted in the last elections are tallied in this report, which is an average, and it indicates a perspective that you might misconstrue or misunderstand as being, this is something that's extrapolated from the ECN's report of the last elections process. And just so that you know, the ECN's report only came out yesterday. We don't have it as yet because the members of parliament have indicated in their debate yesterday about the report, kindly, you know, that this thing will be made available to the public for transparency's sake, in inverted commas, or like I'm doing here in the studio, air quotes. So yeah, just so that the listeners can understand that particular technicality, Helmut. So as that people don't run away with a stat that you and I will be providing them with.
Yeah.
And they go like, wow, so few Namibians voted.
When it comes to women's involvement, there are three countries that were pointed out as a textbook example of what a lot of other countries are lacking in terms of more like inclusivity in terms of participation, not just for women, but also for the youth. Tanzania came up and Rwanda came up and Namibia came up. But, one way of also looking at this is, again, one of the questions that was asked in this discussion is governance. And every time that they do, they conduct research like this where they move from one country to another, trying to get an ordinary citizen's, point of view on their, on their situation and their political situation in their country.
Yeah.
And obviously, which ties into the economics. We talked about the Afrobarometer report that also pointed out that when it comes to, the way that a lot of Namibians perceive corruption, what Afrobarometer also discovered is that those ones are more like at the, those ones that are like economically in a very not good place. Those ones that are more like low income earners. Most likely, the lower the individual income is, the more they are most likely to going to give this, high perception of corruption. But the more, the higher they earn, the more they say things like, there is, but I don't think it's that relevant to the point where I would just say, is that bad? But that's just the report based on what they observed, and that was then. Now again, what they do is they hold, they do this research. Now, but after getting this information now on the individual citizens' response to the, with regards to their country's political atmosphere. What do you do with that information? Obviously, the first thing you will do is, how can we bridge this gap if there's a gap of communication between an ordinary citizen and a public, public office bearers?
Mm-hmm.
How do you bridge that gap so that there is, the ordinary citizen understands the public office bearers, situation more like, not just their mandate, but also things they can and cannot do. And the things that they can, how can they do it? Because a lot of us, every time that we hear someone, take for example, that was arrested, and you get this a lot in comment sections. It's amazing how much hate you can learn from comment sections. Every time that someone is alleged, alleged for corruption, what's the first thing that you keep hearing people? Just send them to jail. As soon as you are just arrested, just send them straight to jail. But the thing is, there's a process in mind. There's a process in place. And that involves prosecution, hearing both sides of the story, which sounds like, more of a waste of time. But, believe me, the alternative is bad, because once you, once you get rid of that system and then just go to the point of where, anyone that you suspect of doing something, you just throw them in jail without any prosecution. Now you have, the only thing that's missing there is a wrong guy in power, and you have turnkey tyranny, because it becomes, it becomes a tool for political dissident, for everyone that disagrees with me, because you have removed the prosecution procedure out.
Why does it sound like you're explaining Tunisia, Hamoud?
I know.
Because I want to add into that example that you used there.
Yeah.
So you remember when you highlighted the measurements that they used.
Yeah.
The first was obviously voted in the last election, and how does the respondent feel to a political party? So for Tunisia, it's 60% voted in the last election that were interviewed.
Yeah.
But the feeling close to a political party is a meager 7%. And I think it's that president, the guy that tried to suspend the independence of the judiciary in Tunisia.
Yeah.
And there was something else he also tried to suspend. I think it was the parliament. And then he forced through a emergency election. It was like an immediate in snap election that he also brought forward, because the other political parties wanted to boycott it, which technically only saw his party supporters show up to the voting stations. Now, I don't know what do you call that thing? not undemocratic, but rather sort of like a weird concoction of how people interpret the same word known as an open, transparent society. If three guys say, I don't want to play in your competition because you are the ref, the goalkeeper, and the other, the coach,
the manager.
The coach, the manager, the opposing team, the federation.
He also sponsored the tournament.
Exactly. I don't want to play in that league with you because you will anyway just dictate terms to us.
Yeah.
And then you call a snap election. The other guy said, I don't want to be in that election. And then only your voters show up.
The question is, who are you playing against?
Yeah.
Because now the whole thing useless.
But here's the other weird thing. Any voter will tell you on the ground, for example, like in the Tunisia example, that the other parties had candidates on the ballot papers. So, if your candidate was there, even though you said you don't want to participate, then what then? How did your candidate get there? But still, I'm digressing a little bit. You get to the Namibia example, Helmut, of that. We're at 69% voted in, and I suspect this is probably the 2021 or 2020 elections. What's 2021? No, 2020, 2019 elections. I suspect it's those statistics. And.
Is it a voter turnout?
Yeah.
2019.
Okay.
2019 is, what percentage is that?
69.
69. This one is for presidential election was, or maybe that's a combination of both because,
yeah.
2019 for the presidential election for us, the voter turnout was 60%.
Mm.
And for the National Assembly, it was, 60.8, which is, you can just round it off to 61. Yeah. And then, for the National Assembly, it was 60.4. That's just 60%.
Yeah. And for the feeling close to a political party, apparently 50% of Namibians feel close to the political party that they favor. However, it's a completely different thing with the voter turnout once again.
Uh-huh.
Because you can feel close to a party, my guy. But if people don't show up that day,
still,
at least it's not the 7% or the 7% from Tunisia or the blank space from Eswatini. Well, how do you compete against the king in Eswatini?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a bit difficult, man. 11% in Sudan. Wow.
Look, if you look at this table, which is why I've really, I just went through this thing like 1,000 times because now I'm looking at Gabon.
Yeah.
Really? So, Gabon
should,
is...
You should look at Sudan, Hamoud. Sudan is in a civil war. And there are people that participated in this thing.
Cameroon.
Yep.
Yep. Voted in the last election 41%. That's not good.
Yeah.
How many people that feel close to a political party? It's just a 34%. How many people discuss politics? 73%. And you can imagine some of those guys are really pissed off.
Mm.
Yeah, because, well, the president is half the time in Switzerland. Yeah. you and I talked about, Uganda's, proposal. I think that law was passed to prosecute civilians in military courts, which is a bad idea, which again, the country's own National Assembly, more like, Supreme Courts, told them that that's not how things are supposed to work.
Mm.
We are not in medieval England. Yeah. So, But when you're the boss, you just, bulldoze everything through. Mm. But the thing is, it's things like that that generates a lot of sentiments. And you can see this going on in a lot of, in a lot of countries, especially, take for example, the Qatar's gift to Donald Trump.
Mm.
Now, how do you think that makes ordinary citizens feel? Because again, it raises a lot of questions and you have polarization that's bad.
Anywhere else, Helmut? Everyone else would have asked, for example, let's say if it was one of our presidents that received such a gift, so public.
Oof.
Everyone will ask, what did you give?
Yeah.
What did you sell to get that level of a gift from the Qataris?
He gave me a gift.
He gave me a personal
multi-billion-dollar gift.
Yeah.
Mm,
who's going to service that jet?
Thank you.
And it's a Boeing Nohal.
Oh man.
It's a Boeing.
I would have gone for Airbus. Boeing, this whole thing of landing gears falling and doors opening midair.
Of the plane confusing itself with land and all that. No. Or underestimating how far it is from
how far the ground is.
Like giving someone a dysfunctional missile, guided missile, instead of saying, okay, go shoot my enemy, the missile flies back to you.
there was a very interesting article in The Villager today. This article pointed towards, a chain of basically, okay, at least to me, pointed out how things are connected in a society.
Mm.
And that's stemming from how greed ends up with keeping all the resources for a just selected few.
Yeah.
And then leaving everyone who can barely afford a bread at the ground. And that's mostly the bigger that number grows, the more it threatens that country's democracy.
Mm.
Because, unemployment affects GDP growth, strain economic stability, and disrupts social web. It's a domino effect.
It is, because it is connected.
Yeah.
And the worst thing, Helmut, that feeds into that article itself, because I didn't finish reading that article by that opinion piece that is in today's e-paper. If you look at just that subject matter, factor in, remember the discussion that I always give, the example that I always give. You've got Ministry of Agriculture that is to try and achieve food security.
Mm-hmm.
However, when malnutrition or undernutrition kicks in, or overnutrition kicks in, Ministry of Health is the one that has to respond, not Ministry of Agriculture. And then if there's other particular, let's call it even like an environmental crisis occurs, Ministry of Agriculture is in the realm of Ministry of Environment, but Ministry of Environment becomes the lead agency to respond to that environmental crisis. How then and that's just the report that you and I cited from the Auditor General. How do many of these ministries of ours not realize that they have got literally interconnected, intertwined, overlapping functions that are literally, it's like the Siamese twin discussion. They're literally joined at the hip. They have to walk together.
Yeah.
They have to speak together.
Yeah, and that takes us back to that those two ladies last year in that Minister of Gender discussion, where the question of why were these safe places that are meant for people that are running from from the insecurities of their own places, like from domestic violence, for example, why were these places closed down for the most part, if not for the entire year? Like, is it a financial problem? And if it's a financial problem, who's responsible to solve that problem? Now, I understand why that question was directed to, was directed to the Minister of Finance, because, I think they're just trying to find out if it's a financial problem until the
Or does he actually
have a direct role to play?
Yeah.
So one thing that obviously made clear was that all we just do is disperse the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which project is prioritized by these respective SOEs or ministries, that's up to them. We don't dictate terms. Now, when you look at that, then you see that there's a lot of connections that involved here. Now, these are safe places for people that are fleeing from some types of abuse. When they're fleeing from abuse, they obviously have to, the police must be aware of that. And, if it's an abuse case, it becomes also, you have to know that this person is not only impacted physically, they're also impacted psychologically. Mm. So the Ministry of Health comes in. The money to basically, bankroll all these activities, that's where the Ministry of Health, that's where the Ministry of Finance comes in. But, gender equality, that's the Ministry of Gender. So it's a whole different ministry on its own. So to sort of keep the safe places running, for people that are fleeing from abuse. You have a lot of ministries involved. You have Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security involved. You have Ministry of Finance. You have Ministry of Health. You have you have Ministry of Health. You have Ministry of Gender. All these guys have basically overlapping role. That's more like their junction where they all have to play their respective role. Because, the police officers can just show up and make sure that whoever they are running from, if they, you know, follow them, then they can just keep them safe.
Mm.
But, counseling, there's only so far they can go. That's where the Ministry of Health now comes in.
Yeah.
Sit them down, provide them the, you know, emotional comfort. And all that costs money, which again, Ministry of Finance. So, all these things, overlapping of responsibilities makes the Office of the Auditor General's report about the Ministry of Agriculture when they say that they're more like working in silos.
Mm.
Yeah, it also brings up that discussion of, what is going on here? And why is this happening is obviously going to be the first question. And if it's a problem, how can it be solved in a way that we don't keep talking about the same thing over and over again? So, so the way that you see all these ministries' responsibilities, having one focal point.
Mm.
They have a lot, and also you have the Ministry of Finance obviously link to all the ministries since they all need funding. And we also used an example of building a school. Ministry of Mines and Energy is involved because they need electricity.
Mm.
Ministry of Agriculture, Water, yeah, Ministry of Agriculture, well, the water part, they're involved in that because they need to connect their, they need to service the land in terms of sewers and everything and drinking water and everything. And then the Ministry of Works now comes in. And, so you have a lot of, the Minister of Education comes in because if it's a school, if it's a clinic, a Minister of Health comes in. So all this overlapping responsibility, it's more of a spider web. And as someone that loves patterns, it's actually beautiful to just see how all these ministries have to work together to accomplish one specific task.
Yeah.
Yeah, because most of us, when we feel like, there's something I want to find out about Ministry of Education, Senator Steenkamp would be the right person to conduct, but then, you have to understand that to carry out that activity, it takes more than just one ministry.
Which also makes it scary when the mergers happened. Because now remember, the mergers speak towards, I call it the mergers, as if it's now like a private entity buying another private entity. When we obviously had to look at these mergers, you now have to wonder and think to yourself the functions on the ground. Because fisheries, which was a resource ministry by itself, is now part of agriculture. Higher education is now a directorate in the that super ministry, that name that I use, that super ministry right now. NASFAF will now once again become a directorate as well, as announced at the start of this year. Also underneath that super ministry. And you sit there. Oh, and sports is also there, a directorate under that super ministry. And now you sit there with this particular sort of like conundrum. First and foremost, is this probably going to be like a Ministry of Justice scenario where the Oshikati High Court door falls off, the the central ministry guys in Vintu have to ask the Ministry of Works guys, hey guys, go and fix my door, and then it's a discussion of,
Did you fix it? No.
Did you issue some tender notice seeking some private sector bidders, and you need to get three of the best, or the best three quotes ready, because there's a panel that has to discuss. Yeah, who's going to put the hinges back on the door and hang the door back up again on the hinges?
Yeah.
And when you sit with a scenario like that, it looked nice that you have now the super ministry, but now you realize that to do the work on the ground is a little bit more tricky.
Yeah.
Because agriculture is used to gallivanting on land, but now they also have to deal with aquatic affairs in fisheries. the fisheries directorate now that they've got. The balance obviously is one based upon, for example, highlighting what yield does the fishing contribute to the Namibian. Because in one scenario, some economists would explain that fisheries or fishing is part of agriculture, but that agriculture and fishing together are considered part of extraction from the natural environment.
So you may as well just throw them under the Ministry of Mines.
That too. Do you see the conundrum in clarity? And logging, forestry, timber, timber resources,
extraction
falls under Ministry of Environment and Forestry Management. Because it's from Ministry of Environment that you have to get that permit seeking to, you know, when you need to go and cut down some trees for commercial use, you need to get a permit from them. You can't get a permit from anyone else. So the particular overlapping in that scenario is one that I don't see that Namibians actually engage upon such a discussion, Helmut, unless it is based upon, you know, which one of my political parties are the best football clubs in Namibia?
the voted in last year's election. One thing, you know, one reason why I can just, gladly skip that one is because of what the voter turnout was last year, because it was like the best it has ever been in all the history of our elections, especially amongst the youth. Now, when you come to feel close to a political party, obviously a lot of people that participate in an election, they obviously voted for some political party. They affiliate with a political party.
Yeah.
So that brings us to one most important part I don't feel like was addressed. You know, I don't feel like was addressed in this discussion. You know, when we talk about... oh, dear. So when we talk about political affiliation, what are we considering? Like this becomes a very, an individual question, if you ask me, that everyone should ask themselves.
Yeah.
What am I looking for when I just, whatever political party that I belong to, what drove me there?
Yeah.
And take it from someone that joined a church after seeing a hot girl in the choir. There are a lot of bad reasons why you can join any group.
Didn't you say your family, most of your family was involved in church, Helmut?
Oh, they are.
Oh, my goodness. Don't tell me you were like most of us guys that joined the church choir because of girls.
I am a guy. Thank heavens. Now, the thing is...
I know we all fall for that trick. It's the oldest trick in the world. But don't worry.
And, if you think you are terrible at singing, you have never been in a choir with your crush. Believe me, you are good. Okay. That went south really fast.
Yeah, I know.
Life is beautiful, guys.
Some guys that believe they are bass, but then they find themselves a tenor.
And they are killing it, and even they are shocked. They're like, how am I doing that?
Yeah. At least it has potential. But yeah, you were saying.
Yeah. What drove you to the political party that you're a part of? What drove you to the political point of view that you have? And this is one of those debates that actually never ends, whether it's economical or political, what political system that you use or what economic system that you use. You know, socialist and capitalist and Marxist and all these guys, the debates in this subject just never, it never ends. So even on a, even on a scholarly level, this is the debate that's been going on for a very long time. And, the whole left-wing, right-wing political classification that we find in the political sphere nowadays is coming out towards that 16th, 17th century France, where a lot of people, even with all the economic inequality, still wanted, the kings to rule.
Yeah.
But before continue, commercial break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get it without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassim, bruh.
Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ujendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatuimwe bali heavy, nola natu, heavy bali no heavy. Ile ko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The debates on different political and economic classifications, more like different political and economic classifications. Okay. 1,000 apologies.
Don't worry, guys. It's just a
technical issue resolved. Moving on. So that, for me, So now I must just freeze in one place. Mm. That'd be weird. We still have like what? It's just 60 minutes plus five. Now that's why, and also, the reason why I'm asking the what drives our different political affiliation is because of what we witnessed last year, and we all know about the story of a gentleman in the north that drove a car in opposition parties. Mm. Now, that's not how we should understand politics. And someone here at Mixed Settlement that Will Smith, a different gentleman from a different political party.
Oh.
Yeah.
That. Will Smith and Chris Rock.
Yeah. So, you have all this, I think, we, it's kind of difficult to, to sort of like express this, but, we're taking things a little too personal.
We are on the one side, Helmut, because,
and a little more like too religious.
No, but Namibians are not open enough to talk about, how they feel about their own party leaderships. Let me put it that way for you.
Yeah. So, everything in our party is all good.
Oh,
and all everything
good.
That's wrong is from a different political party.
Yeah, it's another political party's issue. And you see that even in South Africa on a grander scale. Because here's the scenario that I keep seeing.
You don't have to be an expert to know that's being biased.
Yeah, no, but here's what I see from America, from Europe. If the electorate of those countries are unhappy with a policy that you are bringing in,
yeah,
but they voted for you. Your electorate base voted for you.
Yeah.
And you bring in something and they see a year later, there's still no change to this particular aspect. They're going to ask hard questions of you, of the local MPs that represent them, that come from their communities and the constituencies. They're going to ask them because in the UK, they've got the word. What's the thing's name? They don't have the word constituency. No, it is constituency. They have constituencies. No, they've got counties. That's their provinces. In the US, their counties is a constituency and they get state, state representation and or state level, elections. In those particular scenarios, the Americans are not shy to say, yes, I voted for Trump and his policies,
but
now I see my plumbing business is going down because all the South Americans that worked for me have now been deported. To El Salvador of all places. I know it's a crude example, but it's
worst case scenario.
But it's a real example that exists. You go to the UK, you have journalists that say outright, Helmut, that yeah, they are either conservative or they are liberal or they are Labour because they've got a party that's name is Labour, and they will identify themselves based upon their party politics. One of the reasons as to why. They are told, in those countries, you can't, discriminate against someone for their political perspective or for their political choices.
Yeah.
Now, the fear in Namibia, which is a palpable fear, which Africans are not taking into consideration.
Yeah, and most of it is emanating from colonialism.
Exactly.
And then we took it with us into the, you know, into the post-colonialism time which
bracket,
we live
yeah.
today. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, everything to us feeds into, and one thing that obviously became apparent is that, during apartheid, South Africa, of which Namibia was, Southwest Africa, criticizing the government, more like, being critical of the government, it was very risky.
Mm.
Yeah. And, I think we also took that and also, as you can imagine, that's one of those, hush conversations you keep hearing every time there's, we are commemorating days like Kasinga Day, Independence Day and stuff like that,
mm.
or Heroes Day and stuff like that. A lot of people, tries to go back to the time when, when a lot of what we have today is political parties were basically respective liberation freedom fighting organizations.
Mm.
And this is across the continent.
Yeah.
And one thing that you see is that, there are a lot of people in a lot of different political parties that still have that point of view of, don't question authority.
Yeah. And so they come through with a militant.
Because the organizations themselves are more of a conversion to a political party from a military type of an organization.
Yeah. Now, have you ever seen that South African party MK?
Yeah.
How they dress when they go to the parliament?
Yeah.
They wear military fatigues.
Yeah.
Which begs the question. I mean, Zuma's daughter Duduzane, or is it Duduzile? Which one is the boy? Which one is the daughter?
Is it, I think it's Duduzile. Duduzane. I'm not sure. I know them as, the not one stubborn one and the stubborn one.
Who's the stubborn one? The daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is.
Oh, that one is controversial.
Oh, yeah, she is.
Yep.
So, the daughter, they wear military fatigues, but she's younger than you and me.
That's a bad idea. Okay.
So what liberation are they fighting?
Yeah.
And remember when you and I dissected the voting data of South Africa last year, yeah. after the elections, the presidential elections, we came to us because the South African Elections Authority, the IEC, broke it down, remember, where we could look at age groups, we could look at provincial voting patterns, and we came to KZN,
yeah.
where it seemed it was predominantly Zulu-based, meaning it was tribal-induced voting that brought that party to bear.
Yeah.
Remember also that the Zulu group in South Africa is one of the largest groups. It's one of the largest groups in South Africa. Plus, it also has one of the strongest traditional authorities in South Africa.
Now, with a lot of influence, because that's very central in politics, influence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why, that's the reason, I think, if not one of the main reasons behind the tit for tat on Dalai Lama's successor between China and India right now. Political influence.
Yeah,
the Dalai Lama has a lot of, a lot of people are rallying behind them.
Yeah.
So if the Dalai Lama is on your side, you have all those people on your side.
His territory is Nepal, ne?
Yeah, must be somewhere in Nepal.
Or is it Tibet?
I think it's Tibet.
Because,
Nepal is the one with like a funny looking flag, right? The only one with a,
but both of them literally, you have to access them through China because, what's the guy's name? That's the streamer that I follow on YouTube, Bolden Bankrupt, the Englishman. So he wanted to go to, is it Nepal or is it Tibet? But he wanted to go to one of them, one of the two. And you need a visa, Helmut. When you land in China, you need to apply internally in China to go and visit this territory.
Tibet.
Tibet or Nepal, one of the two. It's the same. They've got the same thing.
Yeah, it must be Tibet because Nepal is a sovereign state.
Oh no, Nepal is independent. Yes,
it's a sovereign country on its own. So the border between Mount Everest is the border between Nepal and China.
So then it is Tibet.
Yeah, must be Tibet.
Yeah.
He
had to apply for a visa in China to go to Tibet. Now here's the thing. it's apparently that the Tibetan authorities have a local legislation that says they want to know what kind of a tourist you are that comes to them.
So yeah, they're very traditional.
So that you don't, what you call it, interfere or spoil ways of life.
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of things. So if you're going out there to go look for
a couple of beers,
a wonderful life. Yeah, it's, okay, what I saw from that video was, you know, it's far and few between, but still getting back to that particular indicator and coming into discussions, for example, that we see here from the Chinese perspective, it's based upon, they want to have control of every aspect of your life. You can do other things. As long as it's not anything to do where you don't become politically active. You can do anything else.
Anything you want. That's fine.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't become politically active. And they also realized, you know, that with the Catholic Church in China, the Chinese government appoints the cardinal of China.
Huh?
Yeah. It's a negotiation that the Vatican had to strike with China.
For them to sort of like have a significant, I mean, for them to have a presence in the country.
Not just the present scenario, because remember, before 1990, Christianity was sort of like a grassroots, you know, underground movement.
Yeah.
I'm now making it sound like, you know, something illegal, but technically it was illegal, in some communist scenarios around the world before 1990, was that, religion was most, the enemy of communism. Because it was an opposing ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So communism wanted everyone must be thought of equal. Everyone must have equal status to flourish from. And religion is the opposite of that because religion says, yeah, we are all equal, but you, in reality, you own different stations in life. So, which technically doesn't translate to anything prosperous. So if you're lucky, you're lucky. If you're not, you know, deal with it. So, from such a perspective, obviously, you can see how religion and communism would have opposing ideals or ideologies to each other. Enter now into this modern scenario. And we're obviously still on the African perspective of things because some of the... Okay, the first two measurements of this report are essential, Helmut, because I see political involvement in countries in Europe, in other parts of the world... even just the aspect in the discussion that's happening in Kenya, where, for some reason, the Kenyans decided to go and have a demonstration about something that happened 35 years ago to try and commemorate it, and it became violent, I think, from Sunday? Was it Sunday or Saturday? It just went violent.
Because
the police were like, you know what, you guys can't walk here. You know, the Kenyan police doesn't have, who needs enemies if you can have the Kenyan police?
One of those mistakes that we keep repeating as a species is, thinking that violence is not, I mean, is going to work.
Yeah. Or that it's going to get you the results you want.
It doesn't. Colonial Europe found out the hard way. It doesn't work. They tried cracking down politics, but the more they cracked down liberation movements on the African continent, the more they merged into one bigger liberation movement to the point where they had no choice but to just, negotiate.
Yeah.
But believe me, before they came up with the idea of sitting down to negotiate, they thought cracking down on anyone that raised against them was going to work. But it didn't.
Yeah, it didn't.
It never works, every government, for some reason, if you just read the history of the fall of the Soviet Union, one thing, and basically the fall of every empire, the first thing that you see is that, anyone that's in power at the time tried their level best to rally the military to sort of like crack down, but the thing is, people are just many.
Mm.
Yeah. And even if you crack down a movement today, it's just going to raise up and become bigger, so, negotiating is your only choice.
Mm.
And, end SARS protest in Nigeria again. This exact same mistake that the government made at the time. They thought, you know, just sending a bunch of, commercial break.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Ah, only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, thank you very much for that commercial break. Enjoy responsibly. 30 minutes to the hour of 6. But there's one thing that I also thought, and this is one thing that, you know, gets me fascinated about human behavior. You know, one of the reasons why, you know, corporal punishment is not advised is because, again, it doesn't work. You're just racing someone who will one day punch you in the teeth. Yep. You'll be spanking them today, and then you move to a broomstick. And when they are strong enough, they will just, when they get tired of it, one day they're going to turn around and punch you.
Yeah.
Sure. But look, it seems like we never learn, but, one interesting aspect of Namibia is that of, discuss politics occasionally. 57% is like, huh?
But the question is, which is also a question I would have loved to see in this waiting, Helmut, was what kind of discussions take place in that political discussion?
Because that's very broad.
It is. Mm. It is too broad.
Yeah.
I know it makes it easy to measure, makes it easy to apply sort of like a metric to. But the downside here is if you're in Tunisia, right, where the president decides to scrap certain things. He tries to do a Donald Trump override the legislature and the judiciary.
Of the parliament.
Or you're now in Kenya where, the police
they show up trigger happy.
Yeah. They are literally an authority above and beyond themselves. Or let's say you're in probably one of Southern Africa's most, volatile countries when it comes to political atmosphere. That being Zimbabwe, you don't know where to look.
Yeah.
And when you come to South Africa, I have to be honest, Helmut, with the South African political landscape. I mean, that thing is both, it's both almost like Pirates of the Caribbean / the Godfather movie series. Because the political moves that police commander from KwaZulu-Natal pulled on Sunday, Mkwanazi.
Ramaphosa
was in
Brazil. Yeah.
Yeah. The moves that guy pulled, because I sat there thinking that whole Sunday, did this guy do the one thing that he knows works in his favor as a police officer? He went to the press. Because the media always believes the police. We always believe the police. The worst thing is, Hamoud, is for the media to try and investigate the police. The police are so empowered as an investigating authority. You know, in Afrikaans, when they tell you, loss, alles, just give up. They just tell you, give up.
Don't
even think about it. Because the question once again arises, if you've got such a powerful watchdog, who can investigate that watchdog?
Yeah, that's the thing. They always say if you have people protecting you from your enemies, who is going to protect you from these guys that are protecting you?
Yeah,
that's more like a dilemma. I feel like that's a dilemma of everyone with bodyguards. You have bodyguards to protect you from from your threats, but what if the bodyguards themselves and they have a history of doing that? What if they become a threat themselves? Who is going to protect you from them? Mm. So the best you can, I think that's one of those, spheres of our lives, of human life, where that depends on just cross your fingers and hope they don't backstab you.
Which is also obviously another Game of Thrones reference that I can make right there.
Yeah, just, roll the dice. Yeah, yeah, but when it comes to a contacted MP, Namibia, on the other hand, turns out, according to this report, we are not very good at contacting our MPs. We are at 11%.
Well, Helmut, if you realize, like what I've also realized,
yeah,
there's a whole bunch of MPs that walk around with 5 numbers. So you don't know which number is the actual number of the MP.
Yeah.
If I tell you today, Hamoud, that every minister gets another number besides a number that they've had, what would you tell me? You tell me, Dwight, really? Is that security purposes? Probably. We don't know.
Yeah. It could be, you know, or at least one of the reasons could be security.
Security purposes, yeah.
Yeah, because that's also a concern, you know, on its own.
But then here's the thing. If there is some sort of a security issue around a minister having a mobile phone, why did the minister then get a mobile phone?
I'd give you an example, but it would get us fired. But, in-person interaction. We are 3 million. And, we don't have a large number of public officials relative to our population. So, it's kind of like, impossible for each and every single one of us to get a one-on-one FaceTime of, questions and answer session with the president or any minister, for example. But that's where I think, channels of communication now comes in handy. And I think that's where technology now becomes very important. That's where public relations, public relations officers, that's where WhatsApp, Meta could be spying on us. But the point is,
I finished that point because I want to answer your point on that.
Technology, I think, is being helpful in more ways than one with regards to reaching out to public officials on certain things.
So, in response to that statement, Helmut.
Yeah.
There's a very interesting thing that a political scientist scholar, who's a family member of mine, because they studied political science, explained to me about when politicians touch base through the media to the electorates. That's when said particular politicians try to touch base, literally. Think of it as in sales. You know, like a sales strategy. You saw that client like 3 months ago, and then your manager comes and tells you, go and visit that client again. They haven't spent money with us again.
Ouch.
It's literally that kind of a strategy. So it's one of the reasons also why, in terms of my role, being in media now for so long, since moving from one side of it, the commercial aspect, now to the communication aspect of things, I see the broader spectrum because political parties always, if you think about a political party in gaming terms, they are always the people that depend on someone else carrying their message. So they always depend on the media carrying their message. Now, if you've got, unfortunately, a bunch of gullible journalists working for you, those journalists would go and think, oh my goodness, whatever this political guy is saying is just, it's gold, it resonates.
Yeah, let's take it, on face value or something.
In love with what this guy is saying, and this guy could be, just
lying through his teeth.
Spewing AI generated slop that that his spokespeople had generated through one of the AI programs. And if you take that scenario at face value, then in many cases, and this is also where media analysis comes in, Helmut, you'd be no better than in Africa, would be no better than the tabloid media that the UK has. It's Helmut, in that country, the one tabloid can say, yeah, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And then the other one says, yes, this particular politician, we're in love with him. And the other one goes like, all the politicians we have are just complete garbage. We don't know. They don't know what plan they have of anything. And there's like 70 of those outlets. Obviously, COVID changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
But when you come to a diverse particular political role that Africa has, or let's say participatory role that Africa has, you look at those statistics that you highlighted there. You look at the extreme, which is, what's his name? One of the extremes is Tunisia. They voted for someone, but they don't want to talk about their politics because they know it's on its way. It was at one stage on its way to authoritarianism. Or like you highlighted there with us, the guy, we don't try to contact a local MP.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you now, Helmut, the MP responsible for Windhoek East constituency, mm-hmm. which I also live in, which our studio also stands in, is an IPC. politician, local authority-wise.
Yeah.
Is an IPC politician. Ask me, did I ever see that man in 2020 campaigning anywhere? I'll tell you no. I never saw that guy. I never saw that guy canvassing for anything in my neighborhood, on my street even.
Yeah.
Even with the presidential elections.
Yeah.
Ask me a question. Did I see anyone canvassing votes in my constituency, in my street? I'll tell you no. I never saw any of the political parties. I never saw them.
Now, that brings us to the point of, what's this, one of the promos, so Eagle FM promos we have, you know, let's agree to disagree. That's also, I think, requires a certain degree of, of maturity.
Yeah.
To professionally disagree with someone that has a different point of view on a topic. And for most of us,
which is an inherent right, remember?
Yeah, it is an inherent right. You can hold a different point of view on a subject, and can hold one. We can just argue about it, and then you say, well, you know what, I'm just gonna keep mine, you're gonna keep yours. I think this is one of the things that I actually like about kids, because growing up.
Because they are so brutal.
That's one thing. They're brutally honest. Kids will get you.
Yeah, kids will get you into trouble.
But growing up, in a Christian dominated family, I had, I had two friends at school who were from Somalia. So, from Somalia, obviously, their religion is Islam. Now, I still find, find that family fascinating, because, their family didn't have a problem with me being a Christian and coming over and basically spending time with their kids. And my parents didn't have a problem with with me having friends that were not, with them having friends that were not Christians. They didn't care about that.
Mm.
You will find a lot of people that will, even to this day, because we were talking about this at some point. There are some that will tell you that, look, some of us are from houses where if your parents found out you belong to a different political party than the one they belong to, you are in serious trouble. I was like,
which is true.
That is true. So, now you have this blind obedient type of request that you're passing. You don't have to agree with the way that my political party does things, but you're just gonna have to do it because you live under my roof.
Yeah.
But again, that's one thing that these guys are pointing at, that if we are going to raise leaders of the future, we're going to have to slowly get them off the leash. Yeah. Don't just say, tell them, I know you live in my house, but you can come home drunk, come with crack. I don't care. You're going to end up with the police at your doorstep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but slowly.
You'll be explaining on behalf of that.
Exactly. If they are minor, you're going to be explaining.
Yeah.
So I think this brings up, more of an equilibrium type of situation that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I think this is one of those things.
Balancing act.
That makes being a parent very complicated. So now you have to slowly get trust them in a way that they are matured enough to do certain things, but on some things you still have to guide them and reprimand them. My God, that's a lot to handle.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot to handle, Albert. Because here's another thing that also stems out from what you highlighted in there. The society, for example, and I'm now just looking at the Namibian context of things. Namibians, we don't know where the conversations are happening. However, we are willing to listen to an extreme few. Why do I call them extreme? Well, because they're the ones that have the ability to stand out from the rest, meaning they've got, in most cases, the economic ability to do so.
Yeah.
Or they are well entrenched in their political movements, that these movements have obviously garnered enough political weight and economic
weight. It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Nune udo, otuko etira o special ange, tashia kengeje pa omarudi kayo loka, opone ushendike nawa, nokumona oijamo ili nawa, ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe mbali hea li, nola natu, hea li bali no hea ileko berewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, omafelane Eagle FM, the eye.
Thirty minutes left to the hour of six. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So where were you before the commercial break snuck upon us?
Yeah, so we don't know where Namibians are having their conversations. That's the other thing. Because obviously what this report could also have done is just source from Namibians that they could contact locally.
Yeah.
Which could have been electronically. Which technically also could be a scenario of Namibians having only digital-based interactions. Now,
yeah, digital-based, oof, yeah, them.
Which are technically X-based, Facebook-based, Instagram probably, maybe. Instagram is not basically the top application that exists in terms of
for this type of discussions.
Yeah, for this kind of interactions. I mean, LinkedIn is considered the largest vanity project that exists. LinkedIn and Instagram. However, the best for interactions is literally Facebook and X. And that's obviously if you can surf through Elon Musk's weird stuff in between, you know. But if you move away from those particular planes or realms of discourse, the discourse that then takes place outside of that. Yes, we here at Eagle FM, we have that participatory function. But in many cases, the unfortunate thing is that we also have listeners that are obviously they've got their fan favorites. But then the discourse is not based upon true discourse, you know, subject matter, weight, context that speaks to a subject. It's based upon my football club is better than your football club.
Type of discussion.
Basically.
Yeah, so when we play against you and lose, it's your fault that we lost.
Yeah, but we won the cup 3 times in a row, so you can't complain.
Yeah, and when we play with you and lose, it's your fault. When we play with you and win, you guys don't stand a chance.
Yeah, we are world beaters.
Humans are interesting to observe.
Yeah, and I had to add a little bit of euphemism to that explainer because that is literally how the discourse is. And the discourse is not even based upon policy making, Helmut.
Yeah.
The discourse is not even based upon policy making. Now you see all Namibians, run to public events, for example, some of the things that the IPPR guys have, or some of the other things that some of the CSOs also have. And then they want to have their discourses there, but then those guys are just technically, those, platforms are basically just there telling you, this is our project, this is what we are doing, you know, promoting themselves, self-promotion. So then once again, where does the actual discourse take place? We had such a function as Eagle FM last year with the presidential debate thing that we had on that Thursday. No, it was a Friday night. That's the kind of discourse we're supposed to have. However, that was between the political parties. What happens between the, you know, the everyday people? What do they talk about? The discourse is essential because that thing doesn't reflect anything about true discourse.
That's one thing. And also, you and I that are in this line of work, it's sort of like come as both a job and a very, informative way, type job. That's one thing I like about my job is like, getting paid to be informed.
Mm.
Yeah. And, not giving my boss ideas, but the point.
Yeah.
It's like, you and I literally get paid to get informed because, I've been asked because, I have a lot of friends that are still, that are still studying, and a lot of them, I know two of them that are doing very, development related subjects.
Mm.
Development, fields of study, or they have, development related, subjects in their respective fields of study. So, one of them asked me about SDGs the other day. So I just, went through, gave them, there are 17, this one says this one says that, and in all this, different SDGs, there are sub SDGs as in procedures in which they are going to, a blueprint of what they're going to do to, to execute this, this specific goal out of the 17. And they all have their own different blueprints that, with regards to how they are going to be executed.
Mm.
She looked at me and went like, how do you know all these things? I'm like, this is what I read on a daily basis and talk about it on a daily basis. So, yeah. I've been doing it since 2022, so it's basically stuck, most of it.
Yeah, you've got to tell them to listen to us.
No, I tell them that. That's when they start going, I don't really listen to radio. I'm like, you are going to write Instagram in the exam. Yeah.
Why you had to rub in the salt like that? But that's true. But that's true. Eh?
They know. That's when they start laughing. Like, well, what do we do? But the thing is, I think it's also that also takes us to takes us to the Afro Barometer. More like a report on Namibian youth interest in politics, where it was observed that there is like the older we grow, people tend to take more interest in politics of as they age,
which is what we saw from the South African voting trend last year. Remember they also had a population, what you call it, a population bulge to the bottom.
Yeah.
But when it started reaching from 40 to 59 or 40 to 80, there were a lot more voters registered in that age bracket than from 39 to 19.
I'm not sure if that's, that. I think that was an I think it was one American guy that pointed that out, and it's a very interesting analysis that the reason why that's this is more of a personal analysis that he's providing. It's not based on expert research.
Yeah.
That it could be that the reason why the older people grow, the more they get interested into both political and economic activities in their countries, is because the older they grow, the more they put on responsibilities, and these responsibilities are impacted in one way or another in the changes taking place in both the political in the economic sphere of their country. So they want to keep up with what's going, what's going on with the, with this ministry, what's going on with that ministry, what's going on with this ministry.
Yeah.
Because if one ministry or one, one president, for example, goes and borrow money, like we, it's one of the reasons why we saw a bunch of investors, get out of Mozambique after the tuna bond scandal came out.
Yeah.
Because they knew that, we are the ones that are going to be taxed to set, to service that debt.
Yeah.
So, it's the responsibility of being impacted because, if the repo rate goes up and you have responsibilities, those responsibilities are going to, trickle down to your bank account. They are going to, you are going to see that impacting your financial status. So, that's why the older we grow, the more we gravitate towards trying to understand what's taking place in our countries, both economically and politically. It's because they have a direct impact on us.
Yeah.
But when you have parents now as a cushion for that blow, because anything that changes in the economic world or the political world, your parents will be there to deal with that. But, up to a point, that's when you start going like, hey, so there's things such as this.
I want to see those Namibians that didn't complain about speed humps in Windhoek. And the moment they buy their own car, they start going, ah, you know what, man? City of Windhoek and it's speed humps everywhere. And it's small things like that.
So, you don't see it as a problem until it's directly impacting you.
Yeah. And there are so many Namibians that at first they don't care what happens in local authorities.
Yeah.
Until they become a property owner, until they become a rate payer.
That's when they start.
Until they become an employee, until they've got to pay for services. And then they go and ask critical economic questions, which they're asking to the wrong people and that they never had discourse about. Why, for example, does the refuse removal truck come late on the day that it's supposed to pick up garbage?
Yeah.
Who did the local authority communicate with?
Mm-hmm.
Or, for example, why do you have, for example, I'm not saying Van Duk's mayor is like this, but why does your mayor have a conflict of interest? They've got their own personal business, plus they've got the seat. But you voted for the guy. You voted the man in. You knew that he or she were a business owner.
And boys playing Monopoly.
But they knew that. People know that. There is one such town that has such a mayor.
You just don't want to mention any names?
Nope. Nope.
Yeah, you don't want to be on ACC statistics.
I was a contributing whistleblower on ACC. Nope. But these are the kinds of things that Namibians have to take into consideration of, Helmut.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no law that says a business person cannot become a political leader, right? We saw this obviously also with the US.
Mm.
We see it with South Africa as well.
I mean, the US is one parliament full of business guys.
Technically, yes. South Africa is the best example of how one of the country's richest men and mining owners or mining company owners is the president. Whereas South Africa also had the worst case example of a guy that looked like he could not pass high school math, technically was busy trying to figure out how to count on official speech. But yeah, not throwing any severe shade.
Listen carefully.
Not throwing any severe shade. However, it just makes you look bad as a country that you voted in for such a guy. Still, moving on. There's nothing wrong with it. Which technically means in Africa, dreams do come true. If one of your dreams is to become the president of a country. Dreams do come true. Just pass your school levels, please.
And who knows a guy who has the right surname. But now... one thing that I found fascinating about Ghana on this table is that, during the yesterday's discussion where they revealed the report that you and I have right now, the MC, a gentleman by the name, who's a journalist by training, Mr. Ben Alve pointed out that, for the past few weeks, there have been agitations, a lot of callers calling into different radio stations in Ghana complaining about the state of the roads being sort of like, going in disarray.
Mm.
And this was, it was a specific road. I think it's one of the main intersections in Ghana.
Mm.
And one thing that, one reason why a lot of people were complaining was because, well, the road, I think it was under some type of maintenance, but then the maintenance was basically taking forever, and the drivers were, you know, the drivers were complaining. And one of the reasons why they were complaining is because, well, the contractors had halted, you know, operations because, according to them, they were not paid in a while now. So, all the road users, then added, I think, which obviously included, you can factor in the, you know, the contractors, you know, the workers in there.
Yeah.
Super Bargains await you at USA, where you pay for the product and not the brand. Pay only $26.99 Namibian dollars for 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body cream. $36.99 Namibian dollars for 1 kilo of Mama's washing powder. 750 milliliters Captain dishwashing liquid costs only $18.99 Namibian dollars at USA. And large Sona bath soap, just $12.99 Namibian dollars. You save. We all save. At You Save.
Welcome back. The bricks are just raining on us, but we gotta pay the bills.
Yeah.
A lot of road users, obviously, and citizens of Ghana that were that are frequent users of this road, created a WhatsApp group. I think the way they, you know, where they then in a very short period of time, that group, you know, membership grew to nearly 2,000, and you know, 2,000 people, and those people were now trying to, they were talking about arranging a. You know, they were talking about, you know, protesting this coming Saturday.
Mm.
Yeah, but so the president got wind of it, and the president decided to give a directive. Turns out, and assured those people that gave them some type of assurance that the situation will be taken care of.
Mm.
Seemingly to, so basically at this point it's safe to say that that's all to avoid a protest.
Yeah,
yeah. But then when you look at participation of Ghana. Participation, that's the last column, participated in protest and demonstration, 5%. Like, how big was this protest going to be?
You know, from that story, but it sounded like a mass movement of some sort, you know, some sort of
massive, I know, right?
Consumer movement. Just to go to 5%.
That takes us back to, the point you made earlier. Are we just good at talking about, at just airing our, you know, our frustration on social media? But then when it comes to actually doing something, that's when we all go like,
I'm going to go, my mother called me and they go like, Pri, you're a grown man. Where's,
what do you mean? Your mother called you to do
what? You're not 5 years old anymore. So yeah.
So when it comes to participation in protest and demonstration, the lowest you have there, Botswana, with 5%, and then you have, Gambia with 5%, Ghana with 5%, Guinea with 5%. I can totally understand those guys. Actually, the lowest, also that you also find there lower than 5 is Madagascar with 4%. Oh no, there is more. There is Tanzania with 2%. Now that's when I was like, what do you mean 2%? Is everything going well? That well? Or is just one of those things of being very good at venting out your frustration on social media, but when it comes to actually doing something.
Yeah.
And also put in mind that, for the protests, these frustrated Ghanaian citizens were organizing. This whole week, they were spending it, you know, reaching out to the right relevant authorities so that what they have is a legal protest. So they met with the police.
Mm. So the police probably told the president.
They didn't tell. Okay, fine.
The police did tell the president.
The police didn't tell.
The Almud, the police.
What I was going to say is they snitched to the president.
Okay. Yeah, let's go with your politically correct statement. they snitched.
Obviously, this is more of a containment strategy. Yeah, and look, I think in situations like this, I think one thing that we also forget is this again, you know, sending a directive because of frustrated people raises a lot of questions. Like, how does your oversight channels look like? Because if you're only finding out and acting now,
but that's also the thing, because the president had now has to intervene where it was supposed to be a minister's role. Yeah. Or the agency that had to work with that contractor for that roadworks that just
went. Yeah, well, you can imagine some, you know, the president summoned a couple of people on that one.
Yeah, because it now makes the president look bad.
Yeah.
Remember, Hamoud, I watched partially some of that Ghanaian protests that happened last year. Remember the previous president, Addo.
Addo, yeah, Nana Akufo-Addo.
Yeah, that he went to the General Assembly last year. He went and made a lovely statement there. He went and this thing that you and I focused on, the 2025 theme, the one about the reparations.
Yeah.
He went and announced that as well at the UN General Assembly last year. And then Ghanaian Twitter was on fire with people going like, "Yeah, our president is going to the General Assembly, goes and makes lovely speeches, but his own cabinet are busy imprisoning people here for peaceful demonstrations." And I started looking, you know, on those threads on X.
That explains the numbers of protests and demonstrations.
Exactly. I went and looked into, you know, what credibility is. Now, obviously, there's a lot of people that would just throw in their own particular observation.
Could be
what is the
personal
reason?
Issues are coming from a different political party, all kinds of things.
Yeah. One of the truest explainers that I could find was that it was based upon some particular unhappiness regarding the economy in Ghana.
Yeah.
Youth unemployment as well. Remember, they've got a massive population versus us, but we have a larger land area as a country versus Ghana.
Yeah.
There was something else also pertaining towards a service provision and supposed corruption accusations against Addo's cabinet.
Boy, do I have a story for you.
Now, from there, you will not get a clear answer, Hamoud, from what actually most of the protests that happened under Addo's presidency was based upon. Because Addo looks nice and a well-articulated president on the international scene, even as a fellow African. You would just go like, "Oh, wow, this guy sounds like prim and proper, you know? He sounds like the real deal." Just for you to get to just go and scratch under the surface, skin deep, in what's happening in Ghanaian everyday affairs, then you realize it seems like the Ghanaians are unhappy with a lot of things.
Yeah, that's like my mom, you know, going around saying, "You know, he's a very good boy." And then, so everything that you screw up in public, don't worry. She's like, "Please don't do that when you get home."
Wash the wall. Shave the dog.
What was that nonsense all about?
Rebuild the backyard. You have to go move hell and high water just to satisfy, you know.
Well, Akufo's administration faced a lot of criticism, one of which was the controversial National Cathedral of $400 million that have been in construction since 2016.
Him that initiated that thing, or was it his predecessor?
I don't know if it was him, but his cousin is one of those people that was his cousin was, I think, was the Minister of Finance during his administration. And is one of those people
is this a Bangladesh issue? Is this a Sri Lanka issue?
Gosh. So when it came out, and this is where I think, I really, 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 really wish Africa could really write each other's stories, because most of these situations now, the article I remember making, talking about this, earlier this year on my morning show. There's this BBC article that talked about, the controversial $400 million. Yeah, so the whole story is a comedy show. Yeah, so, you know, with the cousin involved and the reason why they had to build the whole thing, and the allegations are just going wild. Yeah, and I'm going, this is perhaps the reason why. And the the cousin slash former minister of finance was was I think on the I think he left the country last year. earlier this year. I think he left the country earlier this year.
And
I'm saying I think because it was they were trying to look into the Ghanaian authority under the current administration was looking into this into a lot of things coming out of the previous administration, with this national cathedral being one of them. So when I listened to all the protests going on, all these things, now if you are looking for a textbook example of how Africans express themselves against the vent their frustration towards their towards the decisions that their leaders make, I'm looking, what are the participation in in protests and demonstrations in this country, only to find out that it's 5%. I was like, okay, this is is interesting.
Small.
Yep.
It's tiny.
Yep. Namibia, on the other hand, with our small population, we said that Namibia is right here, 13%.
But here's the thing, also, we don't. It's either the people that demonstrate are not participating in that kind of measurement, Helmut, or it's like, what do they call that thing? The people that respond to that particular kind of a survey, there's a lot of them that indicated, you know what, I participated in most of these things. But here's the thing that I've definitely observed. You won't find the same protesters that protested at a youth unemployment movement in Namibia. You won't find the same guys trying to protest for the Karatura community, Karatura residents, issues. The ones about, the disconnection of water and electricity.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And the owing on accounts to the city of Windhoek. You won't find the same protesters at the same issues.
Now, look, the whole protest part for me, I feel like it points to oversight, because if people have to protest, you really have to look through, you have to look at your oversight.
Yeah,
because really that's the frustration that's been going on for a while, and you have not noticed it.
Yeah.
And you can't just wake up, with a bunch of people at your doorstep, holding a petition. That's when you are going, we will take care of this.
Or some of you there in the office are there, pulling the shortest stick between each other, asking now who must go out and collect the petition. Who must now be the one to be asked by back in 2020 with the GBV protest.
I never thought it would be that way.
Do you know how long it took the Ministry of Gender people to come out of the office?
I know.
It took them like an hour.
So they were like, okay, who is going to go? Okay.
At first they were going like, we're going to get one of the two executive directors. And everyone was like, all the girls were outside, because it was predominantly women, young women, they were protesting. They were like, how many executive directors do you have? Now, Minister of Gender was split between, as we've got those two buildings.
What I call the Twin Towers.
Yeah. So the one executive director sits in the one building, the other one sits on the other side. And literally, you could see people running between the two buildings, asking, now who must come out between the, and the executive directors were like, no, you got. And then it was some.
So they were playing hot potato.
And then it was literally some lower ranking of official just below them, like a director of some sort of one of these particular programs that had to come out. The poor person came back from lunch just that moment.
For me, if people have to protest, that goes to show that you are not doing very good with your oversight.
That too.
Yeah. So, 13 minutes into the hour of business and economic segment. So this is where, we pack the bus for me until tomorrow. Same time, same place on Nicola FM. You all have a blessed evening, and please do stay tuned for the next program. That's business and economic segment with David.
On my side, dear listeners, catch us again. Same time, same place. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Lipura nenge no wapomwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Igal FM otuna evi to danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Igal FM, onora etatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko, derewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, o mafilane, Igal FM, the eye.